as you know, each of the three avos epitomizes a certain midah and become for us sort of like the paradigm of that midah. Yaakov is the Amud HaEmes. The Torah itself describes Yaakov, Tite Nemes Yaakov. We know, of course, Avram is Chesed, Yitzchak Alpi Kabbalah, at least is Gvuro or Din. But Yaakov is Emes, Tite Nemes Yaakov. Problem is that the very name Yaakov means dishonesty. Oh, isn't that ironic? That it means trickery. When Esav cries out, Achi Karashimo Yaakov V'yakveni Zeh Pa'amayim, now what does Esav say? That's why you called him Yaakov, because Yakveni Zeh Pa'amayim, he tricked me twice. So his very name means to trick and to deceive. Isn't that crazy? This is the paradigm of Emes, and that's what his very name means to deceive. When Yirmiyahu laments the state of affairs in the Jewish community, particularly how we can no longer trust each other, he says, Va'al kol ach al tivtuchu, ki kol ach akov ya'akev. You can't trust your own brother. Why not? Because akov ya'akev. He's a Yaakov. Every brother, everyone who you're supposed to be able to trust, you can't trust. They're all tricky. They'll all fool you. So how could it be that Yitzchak and Rivka give a name with such incredibly negative implications? Here's their little bundle of MS. You know, this is they just got it, and they call him trick and deceive. Very, very difficult to understand. And the reality is that the greater question is not so much on the name, but on the person himself. Everything Yaakov does in his life seems to run contrary to truth and forthrightness. We read the stories of what he did. He completely deceives his father. He misles his brother into selling him something very valuable, and later cleverly fools his father-in-law into giving him an abundance of sheep, right, in Parshas Vayetze. The ultimate irony that here you have this man who deceit after deceit, and his name means deceit, and we hold him as the paradigm of truth. And finally, Yaakov, much like his grandfather before him, had his name changed. Right after the tussle with the angel, he's no longer called Yaakov, he's called Yisrael. So we refer nowadays not to Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, but to Avraham, Yitzchak, and... Well, it should be Yisrael, right? Except we don't. Except we still call him Yaakov. For some reason, that didn't catch. Avraham is never called Avram anymore. It's always Avraham. But Yaakov to Yisrael, that change didn't catch on so much. So many years later, we still call him Yaakov. Why? So again, three questions. First of all, how could Yitzchak and Rivka give him a name that means deceitfulness? Second, how could he behave in such a deceitful way all the time? This is the paradigm of Emes. And third, how come the name change didn't catch? He was finally given a good name, a name that actually means something positive. And for some reason, we don't refer to him by that name. So the Yesod is as follows. The word Emes appears in bold and in large type in most of our Sidurim in two places. And it's how we conclude both the morning and nighttime Shema. Right? The word Emes, and it just jumps out at you. Rav Shimshon Pinkus in his Sefer HaChumash points out, he didn't write his Sfarim, it was written after he died, they wrote up his Shiurim. So Rav Shimshon Pinkus points out that the follow-up word is different each time. Meaning, what comes next? After the word MS in the morning and after the word MS in the evening. In the morning we say MS v'yatziv. In the evening it's MS v'amuna. So that's based on the pasuk. Lahagid ba'boker chastecha ve'amunascha ba'leilos. Gemara b'metzia, daf pei gimel and beis says that this world is like nighttime. The emes is never clearly evident to us in this world. We're walking around in the darkness thinking we know what the truth is, but the reality is we have no clue what the truth is. It takes a leap of faith to discover truth in this world. The darkness and nighttime in this world requires emes ve'emuna. We need a little bit of emuna to really find any truth in this world because we can't see it clearly. This world is a dark world. The world to come is a much brighter world. And in the world to come, in Olam Haba, the truth is much more evident. It's staring us in the face. So in the world to come, the truth appears as it appears. It is as it appears. It's Emes V'yatziv. And that's why, after all, it's called Olam Ha MS, because in that world, MS is really MS. It's not something that looks like it might be. It's not, as Rabbi Storch was just saying, the tzedakah box that looks like a refrigerator or something, right? It's not something that's off. We actually see it clearly in the Olam HaEmes. That's what makes it the Olam HaEmes. Rav Naftali Yeager, when he was sitting Shiva for his daughter, the Rosh Yeshiva Shayashiv, he was visited by Rav Shmuel Birnbaum, who, Zichron Levracha, was the Rosh Yeshiva Mir in Brooklyn. And Rav Shmuel himself had suffered the loss of two of his own children during his lifetime. So Rav Shmuel said to Rav Yeager, and it meant a little more coming from Rav Shmuel, considering what he had gone through, but he said over the following word to Rav Yeager, he said, the Medrash records that Yitzchak became blinded. So we know the story, right? How did Yitzchak become blind? So Rashi and Chumash quotes that the Akedah, the angels were crying, and the tears of the angels went into Yitzchak's eyes, and that blinded him. But the Medrash says more than that. Not just that they were crying and the tears went into his eyes. I'm sure angels cry more than just that one time. Tears never went into anybody else's eyes. No, but the Medrash says they opened up the windows in Shemayim, and they started to cry, and their tears fell into Yitzchak's eyes. So Shmuel said, why did they have to open up the windows? What exactly are those windows of Shemayim that had to be opened up? So Shmuel answered that the Malachim, watching from the Olam HaEmes, didn't see any tragedy in what was happening. They saw Kiddushim Shemayim, and that's all they saw. Because in the Olam HaEmes, everything appears as clear as it could be. And there is no tragedy. You realize that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is only Tov V'Meitiv. That in the grand scheme of things, it's all for the good. We just don't see it in this world. So from their perspective, privy to the entire picture, there's no reason to cry. How could they cry? Only if they open up the window. Once they open up the window and they're looking at the situation from the incomplete human perspective, that's when they started to cry. And the idea again is, we don't see everything. We don't see everything the way it is. We see everything in a skewed, it's like looking into a funny mirror at an amusement park. We get a basic picture of how things might be, but we don't really see how they really are in this world. This is one of my favorite authors, Malcolm Gladwell, in his, my favorite book of his, Outliers, tells the story of a Jew named Joe Flom. You ever read the book, Outliers? Very good book. So Joe Flom grew up in Borough Park, and he's the last living named partner in the law firm, I could be mispronouncing this, Skadden, Arp, Slate, Meager, and Flom. Okay? Very, very prestigious firm, apparently. He was a child of poor Jewish immigrants, worked in the garment district in the Lower East Side, and through his prowess in litigation, he built a firm that employs thousands of attorneys worldwide. Was extremely wealthy, extremely successful. Rags to riches. Right? Real rags to riches story. Literally rags. They were in the shmata business. They were in the garment business. Rags to riches. But there was much more that went into his success. Gladwell's primary idea in the book is that for great things to happen, we need a mixture of hard work and luck. We need our 10,000 hours. You need to put in an enormous amount of time. But you also need a lot of good luck. So what we call in Judaism, hishtadlus and hashkacha. Right? We need both. We need to put in serious hashtadlus, but at the end of the day, we also need hashkachas Hashem, we need HaKadosh Baruch Hu to put us in the right place at the right time. So what happened with Joe Flom? He made law review in Harvard. Pretty good, right? He was one of the best coming out of the class in Harvard Law School. And he couldn't get a job because his name was Joe Flom, and he was a Yid from Borough Park, and he spoke with a Brooklyn accent. He couldn't get a job. And in all these waspy firms, they would tell him, it's not you, you're a fine young man and you did very nicely. It's your antecedents. Meaning, your bubby was a Jew, your mother's a Jew. You're not getting a job here. A Jew from Brooklyn couldn't get hired by a waspy firm. So he joined, together with a few other partners that are all named in his firm, all a bunch of Yidden, and they hung a shingle and they were ready to take on whatever work came their way. Now, at the time, the waspy firms would not do much litigation because litigation was for hams, it wasn't for serious people. So in the rare event that a corporation would be sued or there was a hostile takeover, Joe Flom was the address. He was the place to go for something like that. And then the 1970s came. And in business, it became much more aggressive. Lawsuits were very common. It used to be people were very averse to lawsuits. It became much more common. Investors were much more aggressive. There was a boom in corporate takeovers. And the white shoe firms weren't equipped to deal with it. They couldn't. They didn't know how to do it. Who knew how to do it? The Yid from Borough Park knew how to do it. Joe Flom knew how to do it. And all of these billion-dollar deals came through his firm. If you imagine, a guy works his whole life. He works so hard to make it from rags to riches, to be the guy who's going to, I'm going to make it good in my family. I got a good education in the American system. And he makes it Harvard Law Review, and he goes out, and he doesn't get a job. Worst day of his life, right? No one's going to give him anything. where he has to hang out a shingle and hope for business? The absolute worst day of his life. As it turns out, it was the best thing that ever could have happened to him. Because the type of business that became so in demand, he never would have had a hava mina of going into, had he been offered what he thought he should have been offered at that time. We don't see the entire picture. We see a very small slice of it. And sometimes, like Joel Flom, in the long run, we're able to see the bigger picture. And sometimes not. Sometimes in the long run, we're not. Sometimes we need to actually be in the Olam Emes to see the Emes. Rambam Basra tells us, Rav Yosef Breder B'Shur Ben Levi Chalash V'Yisnagid. Rav Yosef Breder B'Shur Ben Levi got sick and he was sort of hovering between this world and the next world. Omer Le'Avua, his father said, My Chazis, what did you see on the other side? Amar Le Olam Hafuch Re'isi. He said, I saw an upside down world on the other side. El Yonim Lamata V'Tachtonim Lamala. People who we respect and hold in high regard in this world are nobodies in the next world. And people who you think are nobodies in this world, they're respected and held in very high regard in the next world. Amar Lo B'ni Olam Baru Re'isa. You didn't see an upside down world. You saw a clear world. For the first time in your life, you actually saw things clearly. That's the Olam HaEmes. This is the Olam HaSheker. That's Emes V'Yatziv. This is Emes V'Emuna. So how does one go about finding Emes in a dark world? So the Rambam writes, Yesod HaYesodos V'Amur HaChachmos Leida She'yesham Matzoy Rishon V'hu Mamtzi Kol Nimtza. The basis of everything is to know that there is a God, and God brought everything into being. Belief in God is not only fundamental, it's the Amur HaChachmos. To deny God's existence, it's not only theologically reprehensible, it's tipshus, it's foolish, it's stupidity. If we want genuine truth in this world, we have to look at the root of everything that exists, at the Ribbono Shel Olam himself. Chasam Shel HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Emes. Hashem's name is synonymous with Emes. When we want to know where the Emes V'Yatziv is in this world of Emes V'Emuna, we have to stop asking ourselves what feels true and start asking ourselves what does God want? So Rabbi Storch was just talking about how subjective what feels right and true can be and how it could change within our own lifespans. I'm not even an old man, and how much I've seen change in terms of what feels right and what feels true. We have to go to the source of genuine truth. We have to go to the Ribbono Shel Olam. So God gave us this great gift. The great gift is that we have a natural inclination toward truth. You know, people think everyone's a liar, you can't trust anybody. You get lost, you're driving, and you get before the days of GPS, it used to be that people could get lost. Your Waze stopped working on your phone, let's say. Oh no, what do I do now? I'm actually lost. And you're in a rough neighborhood. So what do? You roll down the window, push down, whatever. You see someone walking. Excuse me, can you tell me how to get to a highway that will bring me back to a better neighborhood? Can you tell me how to get to the Van Roo Expressway, the BQE, how do we get? Oh, sure. You go three lights, you make a left. Now, this is a man, whoever you're asking this question to, if you saw him in a dark alley, you would run the other way. You would never want to meet a person that looks like this person that you're asking directions from. But what do? You follow exactly what he says. Because of course he's telling you the truth. He said, what he's giving you has got to be MS. Wild, no? As soon as he provides directions, you trust him and you follow his directions. Because when a person lets his guard down and he stops thinking about advancing his own causes in this world, ultimately what we fall back to is MS. Everyone is fundamentally honest. A child has to learn how to lie. Naturally, you just say what is. Yaakov lived his life asking not what seemed like truth, not what our definition in this world of what truth is, but what the Emes V'Yatziv is. He wasn't interested in Emes V'Emuna, he was interested in Emes V'Yatziv. He was interested in the Ribbono Shel Olam's truth. At each stage, each decision, each deception, what we would call a deception, was what does the Ribbono Shel Olam want from me? And that is Emes. It's a paradigm shift. Emes is not what seems like it's true. Emes is what the Ribbono Shel Olam defines as true. In this world, we don't see the emes in it. We see Yaakov, not a Yashar. And that's why we still call him Yaakov. We don't call him Yisrael, because that's the way we perceive him in this world. Yet, when he encounters a malach from the other side, someone who does enjoy the broader perspective, the angel can't help but look at this man and say, Yaakov, are you kidding? This isn't a Yaakov, this isn't a Yaakveni, this isn't a person who fools people, who deceives people. Yisrael, lo yikariot shimcha Yaakov. No, don't call him Yaakov. Yisrael Shema, his name is Yisrael. Yaakov isn't who you are. As Jews, we can't lose sight of that aspiration to be B'nai Yisrael. Appreciate that the emes v'yatziv in the olam ha'emes comes through our dedication to emes v'emunah in this world. That if we take our lives through this world, asking at every step, what does the Ribono Shel Olam want from me? Not what does the world tell me is emes. What is the actual emes, the objective emes? Well, then we become the B'nai Yisrael. Then we become the people who represent not just emes v'emunah, but we represent the emes v'yatziv as well.